Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to talk a little bit about reincarnation today as taught in the Meyer material. One thing that I've learned over the years of looking at this stuff, you really have to show assiduousness, which maybe is today's vocabulary word, assiduousness. When you're studying the Meyer information, you have to show great care, great perseverance, great diligence. You have to be meticulous, painstaking, rigorous. All these synonyms kind of go for what it takes to learn this information. Billy Meyer is he's an 80-year-old man now. I guess he's getting close to 80 years old. He lives in a little tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is some 45 minutes to an hour east of Zurich. He grew up even farther north in Switzerland in a small area called Niederflux, which was a short distance from a town called Bulach, which was surrounded by what they call the Eichen, Moser, and Bruder Mountains, as well as wide forests and meadows and fields. And Billy grew up learning a lot. Even before he had any extraterrestrial contacts, on a mild night in May in the year 1941, around 3 a.m., he had a kind of a revelation, and he went outside, crawled out a lower window, sat down on a bench, looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he said, "My life exists because of the love of creation." And he felt very strange, and a slight shiver came over him, even though the night was very warm, and he felt peculiar but not frightened. And he looked up at the stars in the vast outer space, and he again heard these words, the origins of which he could not understand or decipher. And he heard himself say, "Everything is created out of the light of love." And then further words followed, which said, "The space between the stars is empty, and yet not empty. And everything is creation, and creation itself." So Billy had this great epiphany as a very, very young boy, and then his contacts with Svath followed, and he started to learn about the human spirit form, and he started to learn about reincarnation, and he started to learn about his previous lives. And Svath told him that he had been the people that today we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And later he would learn about the distinction between the material consciousness in the spiritual consciousness. Every human being has a material consciousness, which is kind of who they are during the current lifetime. It consists of your personality, your conscious mind, your unconscious mind, your subconscious mind. But you also have a spiritual consciousness. And your spiritual consciousness is related to your spirit form. Your spirit form is the part of you which never dies. And the whole purpose of your life is the evolution of this spirit form. Now, we have this idea or term called the soul, which is kind of a misnomer. What we really have is the psyche. And the psyche is actually part of material consciousness. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. The material consciousness is your personality. It's your subconscious mind. It's your unconscious mind. It's really what you think with right now. Your spiritual consciousness is kind of in the background. Its role is impulsing the material consciousness. Its role is also in recording all your thoughts, everything that you do during this lifetime. And the spirit form is completely invulnerable. It cannot be hurt by anything in the material world. It can never become crazy. It always is thinking in a neutral, positive form. The spirit form actually has thoughts and feelings, although it's not completely conscious. It has thoughts and feelings. And there's an area in your spiritual consciousness called the Gemut. And the Gemut is what regulates the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Its counterpart, the counterpart to the Gemut, is called the Psyche. The Psyche resides in material consciousness. The Psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. Thoughts can be both conscious and unconscious. And one of the goals of the spiritual teachings is to have us as much as possible have our thoughts be conscious so that we can steer those thoughts. Because if you function on unconscious thoughts and you let your mind drift, which we all do too much, then we go into negative thinking and we begin to be influenced by what's called Assartung in the German language, Assartung, which means to get out of control of the good human nature. And we want to be Gemütsmenschen, as it's called in the German, which is being in control, to be influenced by the good human nature. So, and this is where assiduousness comes in. You have to show great care and perseverance to be continually analyzing your thoughts, being meticulous, attentive, rigorous, and continually analyzing your thoughts, because if you don't, your thoughts will tend to drift and you'll have unconscious desires or conscious desires taking over your life. You'll drift into negative thinking. And there's like five or six statements that you can find kind of in a summarized form in the Might of Thoughts book, five or six characteristics of healthy thinking. So tell yourself, I'm optimistic. Even if you're struggling right now and you're having some pessimism in your life, tell yourself, I'm optimistic. And this will help you move a little more towards optimism. And you'll have a feeling associated, even with saying that, I'm optimistic. And the feelings come from the thoughts. So you say, I'm optimistic. I'm confident. Here's another thing. When you're drifting into negative thinking, you'll feel a lack of confidence. So tell yourself, I'm optimistic. I'm confident. I'm confident. I'm relaxed. I'm cheerful. I'm optimistic. And I'm thankful. And you can find all of these guidelines embedded within the Might of Thoughts book. And you can pull those out for yourself. But again, what we're trying to do is be very assiduous. We're showing great care and perseverance in terms of our thinking. And this is the very, very important information that's contained in the Meyer teachings. Because the purpose of all these reincarnations is the evolution of your spiritual consciousness. And what happens is the spirit form, you've got the fetus there in the mother's womb. It's been living for 21 days. It's kind of functioning on impulse evolution, almost like a plant. And then the creation through natural cause and effect kinds of powers pushes the spirit form or sends the spirit form into your superior colliculus. The superior colliculus is the area in your middle brain associated with thinking and the regulation of sight. So the spirit form comes in, it brings with it what's called the consciousness block. The consciousness block again contains your personality for this lifetime, which is a new personality, a new conscious mind, a new subconscious, and a new unconscious. Your new subconscious mind, although, has programmed within it all the levels of evolution from your previous lifetime. So what's stored in the subconscious, programmed into the subconsciousness, are your level of wisdom, your level of insight, your level of logic, your love, your perseverance, your patience, your assiduousness, how careful and diligent you are, all these things that you've been evolving to achieve over millions of years are stored in your subconscious. And your subconscious will also impulse the material consciousness. And these impulses will help you as you're growing, as you're living the new life. Now, we're blocked from remembering our previous lives mostly, and this is a good thing. So an impulse is the influence of a particular feeling, mental state, and an involuntary inclination prompting an action. So impulses prompt actions. And an impulse is very similar to a signal. And signals are a kind of communication. And sometimes signals are encrypted communications. So what's happening is you're getting these signals, these impulses from your subconscious, which has the stored up evolutive levels from your previous life. You're also getting impulses from the Gemut, from the spirit form, and you're also getting impulses from the storage banks, the universal storage banks. The spirit form evolves independently through your material consciousness. So the spirit form, before it moves back into, before the reincarnation process starts, is back in the spirit realm, which you could think of as an energy band around the planet, another dimension. When you die, your spirit form leaves your body and takes your consciousness with it. That consciousness then is processed in something called the overall consciousness block. And the overall consciousness block creates your evolutive essences from your previous life. So it's going back over all the activities, all the thoughts, all the feelings that were associated with your previous life. And it's these evolutive values are getting stored in the spirit form, and they're getting programmed into the subconsciousness of the new personality. The personality is never repeated. Even though you've had millions and millions of reincarnations, your personality will always be different. So when the brain's activity stops, this consciousness block, again, which is your personality, your conscious and subconscious and unconscious, goes into the overall consciousness block, which is in the spirit realm. The consciousness and the personality are dissolved and stored. The overall consciousness block creates a new material consciousness block and a new personality. Again, the personality is never repeated. The evolutive values, which correspond to truth and reality, the evolutive values are transferred into the spiritual consciousness in the form of impulses. The spirit form then processes and stores these evolutive values within itself and holds on to them for all time. So these evolutive values are things like love and wisdom and logic and discernment. And again, these higher evolutive values will be stored into your subconscious. So this is the process which occurs. So there's a process which goes on while you're in the physical life, and a process which goes on while you're in the spiritual life. So the process in the spiritual life, in the spirit realm, your spirit form is absorbing these evolutive values, and those evolutive values are being programmed into the subconsciousness of your new personality. And this stuff's kind of technical. It's very interesting, though, what's going on here and what the purpose of your life is. There's not a heaven or a hell in the terms that our religions teach. And it's very important that we start to understand what the purpose of our life is here. Now, unfortunately, the people of the earth have been very influenced by extraterrestrial humans who were on the earth. One who was called Jehovah, his real name was Hen. He was a part of the Giza intelligences, which were, again, far below the earth in the old cubical constructions, far below the Great Pyramid, and they were what is sometimes referred to in the Bible as the Elohim. The Elohim, it's very interesting. The Masoretic texts of the Old Testament were originally stored or written as Hebrew consonants, strings of consonants. And if you look at those original texts, they were very objective. They really didn't talk about a God per se. They talked about the Elohim and just told the story of what the Elohim did. What happened is translators came in and applied the vowel points to the Hebrew words, and that's where you get the interpretation of God doing this, God's spirit, da-da-da, when in fact, that's not really what it's referring to. Let's just take the word Jehovah. If you look at the word Jehovah appears only in the King James. If you search for that word in like the New International Version, you won't find it. Jehovah is probably a term that came into being around the 1600s because the letter J, the English letter J, did not really come into existence until about 1600. And there was no J sound in the Hebrew and the Greek and the Aramaic of the Old Testament. So that's why the term like Yahweh is legit, because that is YHWH. You know, there's no vowels inserted into there. Well, somehow Yahweh over time became Jehovah. So in the King James Bible, which is a Christian Bible created for the Church of England around 1604 and was completed in 1611, the term Jehovah appears in Genesis 22:14, the story where Abraham is hearing in his head the thinking, telepathy, just like Billy Meyer did or does, getting these signals in his head from Jehovah. And Jehovah's telling him, I'm the creator of the universe. You know, I'm God. And he's saying, you need to sacrifice your son to me. So Abraham builds this altar and puts the wood on the altar, and he's got the knife, and he's about to stab his son and kill his son and then burn the body. Because these Elohim, for one reason or another, like the smell of burning flesh. And the reason they probably like the smell of burning flesh is because it was very soothing to them. Because, and NASA will verify this, when you're on long space flights, when the cells and the skin oxidize, it smells a lot like burning, grilling meat. So this was the smell that these extraterrestrials, which were human beings from another world, they liked that. And there is no reason to burn your son. There is no reason to kill your son for any kind of super intelligence. I mean, see, what happens is the mind, the human mind, gets in this religious fog because it's overwhelmed. It's just overwhelmed. It doesn't know how to process this. The same thing has happened with the cargo cults in the Pacific Islands. They, like in the land, they call it Vanuatu, a series of islands in the Pacific. It's kind of north and east of Australia. One of these islands, I believe, is called Tana. And a cargo cult developed because these people were overwhelmed. They see these airplanes flying in. They see these big ships. They see on their island landing craft come in off the ships and build runways, and airplanes land, and these people are overwhelmed. They're completely overwhelmed by all this. Well, something similar to that was going on the earth around 3000 BC. And people like Abraham were overwhelmed by this. They didn't know what to think. And these extraterrestrials, through the power of their mind, through telepathy and things like that, influenced the people of Israel. For example, in Deuteronomy 20:16, it says, however, in the cities, the nations, quote unquote, of the Lord, which would just be the Elohim, these other guys over here, is giving you as an inheritance, do not leave alive anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, as the Elohim has commanded you. I'm substituting, because the word God, again, is something that was put in later. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things they do in worshiping their gods, and you will sin against the Lord your God. This is very interesting, because there is a competition between these Elohim. You know, there are different groups. And there is really an interesting guy out from Italy. His name is Mauro Biglino, and he's a translator of the Bible. He has translated over 23 books for the Vatican. And he says the Bible does not talk about God. And again, he goes on, and a lot of the stuff that I've told you already today is things that Mauro Biglino talks about. One of the things that he does discuss is the word Ruach, and that appears like in Genesis chapter 1. And I've taken a bit of a tangent today. I have to get back on course here. But in Genesis chapter 1, it talks about the Spirit of God hovering over the waters, and this is during the creation process. Well, it wasn't the Spirit of God. The Hebrew word is ruach or ravach, and that doesn't mean spirit. It means wind or anything flying in the air causing wind. And it's related to a sub-Phoenician or a Sumerian pictogram that looks a lot like a craft, some kind of flying craft. So the Elohim's flying craft was hovering over the waters. That's all it was. It wasn't the creator of the universe or anything like that. Many, many people who are experts in the translations know this to be the case. So if you also look at the Bible from this perspective, so many things make sense. Why would the creator of the universe have Abraham, you know, begin to sacrifice his own son? Why would the creator of the universe have Israel go out and commit genocide on the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? If you go to Numbers, and I know I'm talking very quickly here, Numbers chapter 31, verse 7, which we talked about a couple shows ago, the Israel went and killed all the Midianites. So they're committing genocide again for Jehovah or Jehovah or Hen, as the Meyer material calls him, because these Elohim didn't want any competition. One of the things that these intelligences were trying to do is control the earth. And what they did is they scarred the psyche of humanity for thousands and thousands of years by doing this. And that's what happens when a very, very advanced culture comes up against a not-so-advanced culture. It creates this state of arousal in the primitive culture that shocks their subconscious and unconscious minds and affects them for generations in a very, very, very negative way. And that's why all these people in the UFO community, the clamor for disclosure, I don't think they've thought this through completely, because there are many, many people on the earth, in fact, billions of people, that are still under the influence of the original trauma caused by the Elohim, call them the Anunnaki, if you will, who were here on the earth. They were just human beings. They were very advanced human beings, sometimes taller than us, had great powers in their material consciousness. And people like Abraham and Moses were their slaves, their dupes. And as I was talking about in Numbers 31:7, where they didn't complete the genocide on the Midianites, Moses had them go back in and kill the women and the children, except they could keep the virgins for themselves. And so no matter how profoundly evil these people must be, and a lot of times religion will say, oh, these people were so evil they had to be wiped out. Well, if that's the case, why would you spare 32,000 virgins? So they kept 32,000 virgins for themselves. So I've gone off on a heck of a huge tangent here. So anyway, if you reinterpret our ancient writings in this way, everything falls logically into place. There's no cognitive dissonance. So I think the first stage of disclosure really has occurred. It will continue to occur. The second stage now is kind of the evolution of our consciousness as we here on the earth start to understand the laws of nature. And one of these creational natural laws is the law of reincarnation. So let me read to you a little bit from the book The Psyche. This is page 12. It says, equalize. Let me start on page 11. This will make a little more sense. The Gemut is referred to as the spiritual block and factor within the spirit body of a life form. Now, this is something that the Meyer material hasn't really talked about as much as I would like. At least I haven't found it yet. What exactly the spirit body is and how all that works. But we do have a spirit body, and the spirit body contains the Gemut. This Gemut regulates and looks after the spirit consciousness-based feelings and the spirit consciousness-based thoughts. Now, the Gemut can never be negative. It can never be overly positive. It's always neutral, neutral positive. So, the gamut always exhibits what's called harmony, and that's one of the things we're trying to get into our thinking is harmony, the balance, the harmony, the neutral positive balance. The gamut supplies the psyche with what are called harmonious swinging waves, and I had never really thought of them as harmonious, but that's probably, yes, that makes perfect sense. So the gamut supplies the psyche with harmonious swinging waves. And these swinging waves, they originate from this cosmo-electromagnetic life energy. The life energy, I believe, is the creation, the spirit energy. So the material consciousness that we have can become negative and or positive. But the spirit consciousness, the gamut, is supplying the material consciousness with these harmonious swinging waves. They're harmonious. That means they're equalized. They're neutral positive. So if you open up your material consciousness, your spirit form will send in these harmonious waves, which will allow you to stabilize and have peace again. Now, what happens in the case of religion, and this is my own speculation, is that people like Abraham, Moses, and people today that are heavily influenced by religion, they're kind of in a psychologically traumatized state. And it's very difficult for them to get back into a neutral positive state so that their gamut can send over the harmonious neutral positive swinging waves to cause calm and peace again in the psyche. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get again to a harmonious state in the psyche. So, spirit consciousness operates only in the form of equalizedness in this neutral positive form. So the neutral, the negative and the positive are harmonious. And the gamut absorbs this harmonious kind of swinging wave, which I think is part of the spiritual energy of creation itself. So the gamut will never have pessimism or melancholy. The gamuts, our impulsations are always neutral positive. So the whole purpose of guiding our thoughts is to allow the spirit consciousness, the gamut, to send the harmonious swinging waves over to strengthen the psyche. Because once the psyche gets back into a neutral positive state, it can be strengthened by the harmonious swinging waves that come from the gamut. So then you're kind of in a state where you can perceive the radiating love of creation at that point. So your what should be our neutral, normal, neutral positive state. So what happens over actually millions of lifetimes, for millions of years, most spirit forms on the earth are about 4 million years old. Some are 8 million to 12 million years old. These are people that have came to the earth on ships in the far ancient past, were part of these ancient cultures. They died on the earth. They became part of the reincarnational patterns of the earth. So there's some older spirit forms here Billy's spirit form is the most ancient. He's 9.6 billion years old. But he's kind of the, what you could call the, he has a special role, let's put it this way. And his reincarnation has occurred before on other worlds. The Pleiaren were able to trace the reincarnation of his spirit form for 13,000 years. And they saw that he had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Later, much later in the contacts, they also realized that he had been the people or the person that they call Nicodemian, which was their spiritual teacher. And they were very shocked by that. They did not realize that at the time. I guess the term that they would use would be universal prophet. He's the most ancient spirit form. He has the most ancient spirit form that's been in the universe right now. There were older spirit forms than his, but they've since merged back with creation. Now, the funny thing is, Billy's not a guru. He's completely down to the earth. So, we here on the earth do this awe kind of thing, where we create idols for ourselves. So you should never create an idol out of the personality. He's just an earth human. His spirit form is extremely ancient. Each universe brings forth a universal prophet who is repeatedly materializing again as a human being in order to speed up evolution. Same thing is occurring in our sister universe, the Tao universe. There is some universal prophet over there who is repeatedly materializing again as a human being to help speed up evolution. And evolution is an important idea because different kinds of beings have different kinds of evolution. We have a consciousness-based evolution here on the earth. Billy's spirit form can be traced all the way back again to this person called Nicodemian, which is supposed to be, I guess you'd say, 3,800,000,000. He came from a world which is 3,816,000,000 light years from our current solar system. After the Nicodemian incarnations, the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer incarnated 8 billion years ago as a man named Henoch. And there were actually 4 Henochs over time, if you go down through the lineage. And there were 2 semyasas, we've talked about this before, one of which was in the Nicodemian lineage and one wasn't. In Contact Report 9, one of these semyasas was related or responsible for the first Adam coming about. There's a lot of really interesting speculation you could do here. I'll resist the urge to do this since I could definitely make some wrong conclusions. There were 3 Henochs, one at 13,500 years ago, one about 9,000 years ago, one 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. The 3 Henochs, these are part of the Nicodemian lineage or the lineage of Edward Albert Meyer. So everyone has a spiritual lineage in reincarnation. You have previous personalities. I have previous personalities. You could think of them as your extended family, in a sense. So you have two senses of family. You have your current material incarnation and your family associated with that. But your previous selves are also your family, so to speak. So you need to think about that. And the reason I think we need to think about that is because we also, as it says in the book called The Way to Live, we need to be our own best friend. So if you realize that you've had previous personalities, these are your very closest friends, so to speak, the former incarnations that you've had. We don't really remember our previous personalities. They can probably be discovered if we spend enough time and effort. But it can also have a very devastating confusion at our current level of evolution. There's something called the age of recognition. It's in the fifth stage of our evolution where we start to come to grips with our previous personalities. But right now it would cause the devastating confusion that would impair your material consciousness to the point of insanity. Think about all the families and friends and troubles and failures you've had. You need to be able to forget your failures and be your own best friend. So forgetting is a protection for the consciousness. It's one of the great things that creation's done for us is forgetting. So we learn to forget so we protect our consciousness. And that's why you shouldn't be constantly remembering failures or constantly remembering difficult times. Let me read what it says on page 408 here. To have no memories of an earlier life in no wise means that one has not already lived such lives in manifold form. Rather, it solely means that one is far from being able to cope with the memories of the earlier lives. Once one views and considers one's everyday life, then one recognizes that its memories also increasingly fade the older one becomes. Whereby, naturally, exceptions can always arise for certain occurrences and so forth. But the rule is that we don't remember our previous lives. I'm going to take a short break here, folks, and play some nature sounds. I'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm back. I tell you what, the interruptions that occur during the show are just unbelievable. You would be surprised by what goes on in the background sometimes. And part of your striving, there's always going to be opposition to moving forward in the spiritual life. And this one was someone pounding on the door that it just wouldn't go away. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what happens here. Anyway, we were talking about previous lives and why you don't remember them. Let me continue. To have no memories of an earlier life in no wise means that one has not already lived such lives in manifold form. Rather, it solely means that one is far from being able to cope with memories of earlier lives. Once one views and considers one's everyday life, then one recognizes that its memories also increasingly fade the older one becomes. So, even your memories in this life that you had when you were younger are fading, whereby naturally exceptions can always arise for certain occurrences and so forth. But the rule is that experiences of the childhood or the experiences of yesterday or just from an hour ago also disappear from the memory and become increasingly weak. Again, this is a blessing. Even though one's living experience of that was extremely vivid or quite stirring, it then soon appears as if nothing had ever happened. And when, in this wise, the human being is often already very quickly no longer able to recognize or to remember any particular occurrences, feelings, experiences, thoughts, words, ideas, actions, deeds, and emotions, and so forth, how can one then even assume that it is completely natural, easy, and normal to remember any particular things which in the last or any other earlier life influenced the one? The forgetting is a protection of the consciousness so that the personality can develop freely and clearly in the frame described by the creational laws and recommendations. So even your lives or your memories in this lifetime that are painful for you, you need to be able to let them go. As a part of your own health, you need to really be able to let them go so you can go forward and maintain a harmonious state of your consciousness. You're looking for the harmony that we were talking about. So, let me continue here. Forgetting is a protection for the consciousness so that the personality can develop freely and clearly in the frame prescribed by the creation laws and recommendations. Spared from the forgetting are only the attained truthful knowledge and the effective truth, the love, the joy, the harmony, the equalizer, the wisdom, as well as the practical living experiences of these values, from which not only the consciousness evolutively profits, rather also the spirit. But the human being must also do something for this. Thus, he or she always has to conscientiously be assiduous in all things. And again, assiduousness is our vocabulary word for the day. To be assiduous means to have perseverance, to be meticulous. However, if she or he does not follow the rule, then in the course of time, these values are also forgotten. So you can lose your spiritual, your consciousness, your material consciousness can forget. Even what you've learned in terms of your spiritual values, your evolutive values. Now the spirit form doesn't forget, but the material consciousness does, and it can. But this whole idea of forgetting is critical to our psychological health. And it's one of the reasons why we don't have at our particular level of evolution, memories of the previous material lives, it's a blessing because all the traumas would be remembered as well. All the failures, it would be, you could go to the point of insanity. Now, there's something called the false I that we've talked about before. And the false I is the part of you that is characterized by the German word Gewaltsamkeit, and it's a tyranny. You have a tyrant in you. We all have a tyrant in us. The human being's I is very mighty, and this is the false I, an exercise that's a tyranny characterized by Gewaltsamkeit, which can only be ended by one going the way of evolution. So there's part of you which is threatened by your own evolution. But the eye's richness of imagination is almost inexhaustible. We're talking about the negative eye. For which reason, on each step of the efforts and wishes to free oneself from its tyrannical nature, it can circumvent and distort the efforts and the wishes as desired. If the necessary care is not applied and the truth of all truth is not acknowledged and helpfully enlisted, the truth of the teaching of the effective evolution in all creational moments is simple and extremely clear. But it stipulates that everything is recognized and understood and is correctly used. However, the self-willed and tyrannical I is very mighty. And as soon as the simple, clear truth begins to work in the human being and stirs and moves him, the I attempts to complicate everything, deny everything, because it knows very precisely that it is fundamentally endangered by knowledge, truth, and evolution. All of the I's inhibiting attempts to sabotage the way of evolution are senseless and negating, in spite of all its efforts. So, you always have a neutral and a positive, a neutral and a positive in life. And just as we had our interruption earlier, there's always the negative side. And you can't push them out. You can't try to get rid of the negative. If you do, that's when you lose your temper, whatever. So you recognize that the negative is part of the challenge as well. And you also have a negative challenge within you, which is the false I. It's the part of the balance, the negative and positive. And one of the ways to get your self back into a neutral positive state is the remembering. And you can remember good things. And it's a good thing to be able to remember good things. And it's called a moment of gladness. And you can find this on The Way to Live book on page 328. It says, and one may also comprehend a moment of gladness, which perhaps simply arises because one sees the snowflakes floating down or a sunbeam which mysteriously fingers through the forest. But it can also be a flower on the edge of a path or a bird and its twittering, which please the consciousness. These are the moments of the peace, of the love, of the happiness, and of the equalized harmony, as well as the reflection and insight. These are the moments which work deep into the inner part of the consciousness and make one's feelings tingle and please the psyche. And these are the moments which in their distinguishing characteristics must be retained so that they constantly remain in one's memory. So the moments of gladness you do want to maintain. And Augenblick is the German word for moments. The German word for moment means moment. Gestalt is another interesting German term. Again, a moment is it's a brief period of time. So we have to remember these moments of gladness so that see, most of what's happening in our society is done so that the consciousness, equalizedness, its harmony is suppressed and blocked. So, I mean, do you listen to the music? I mean, there are still some good music, a lot of good music if you go out and search for it. But what's coming from the mainstream is something that suppresses and blocks your internal harmony. It's something which arouses you in a way that is not healthy. So it arouses you in a way that will not cause you joy or feelings of happiness. And what we're trying to do is, and this is something I don't do enough, meditation will help return you to a neutral positive way, a neutral positive harmony. So anyway, we've talked again about reincarnation, how when you die, your spirit form leaves the physical body, it goes in the spirit realm. And there's a process which goes on in the spirit realm where the level of evolution that you gained in the previous life is stored in the spirit form. It's also programmed into the subconsciousness of the new personality. And then after about a lifetime and a half in an ideal state, the spirit form comes back into the body of a child along with the evolutive values programmed in the new subconscious. The spirit form retains all the level of evolution of the previous life, and then you're a child again in your material consciousness, and you have to grow up. But you'll be impulsed by the learning that your spirit form retains, and you'll be impulsed by your level of evolution in your subconscious. And you'll be impulsed by the universal storage banks. So the next reincarnation, you should get up to speed quicker and have the opportunity to evolve past your previous life. The purpose of your lifetimes is the evolution of your consciousness. And the evolution of the Earth consciousness is really the goal of the second stage of disclosure, which has really already started. For those elite people like yourself that are listening to this show and shows like it, are studying the Meyer material, you are evolving your consciousness, and you are going to be the people that bring in the age of peace, love, and harmony that this spiritual teaching will allow us to have. So you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.